Well, hello and welcome to the Soccer Central podcast, Thursday edition. It is August the 13th. We are 1 week in to the European season, and it kicks off and gets even more interesting this weekend with, of course, the German Bundesliga. Now, we've got a busy show today, although it's just me. I do apologise. Just James Sharman here with you today because John Molnar is too busy doing Amway Championship stuff. Dobby's, I don't know, on vacation doing whatever he does on his vacation. Hate to think what he does actually on his vacation. Dunlop, well, he's busy doing something as well, probably grooming himself in front of the mirror somewhere. Not sure what he's doing, but it's just me. But we've got a couple of great guests for you later today. Bobby the Brains McMahon will join us to discuss some Premier League football. We'll discuss this whole Ava Canero, Jose Mourinho nonsense. We've got some Mario Balotelli histrionics. Great stories about perhaps why he is on the way out at Liverpool, aside from the fact that he just can't score goals anymore. We'll talk also about Sevilla, actually, in Spain, and why Bobby says they might be the best-run club in European football. But, as I mentioned to start with, this weekend kicks off the German Bundesliga. Exciting times here at Sportsnet. For the first time, we are, in fact, airing Bundesliga games this season. We've got some great games coming up for you this weekend, starting on Friday with Bayern Munich against Hamburg. That's at 2:30 Eastern on Sportsnet World. To break down just what to expect this season in the Bundesliga, we're now joined by our good friend, Stefan Binkowski, the knowledge, I like to call him, on all things German football. Stefan, how are you doing?
Hi, James. I'm not bad. Yourself?
Great, thanks. Great. Excited, actually. I've always enjoyed German football for many, many years. And now, here at Sportsnet, we're actually showing the games this season in lovely, glorious HD. We've got a highlight, a new show as well once a week. It's good stuff, and I dare say we'll be using you and your brilliance throughout the season as well. Let's start with this Bayern Munich team. We had to start there, of course. I know it seems a bit like we're being a dead horse here, but they're looking for their fourth straight championship. They signed Arturo Vidal, not a bad little signing. In comes Douglas Costa, another great signing. Out goes Bastian Schweinsteiger, who's been in many ways the face of this team for a number of years. With the ins and the outs, is there any chance it won't be this team winning their fourth title this season?
Well, I think the safe money is probably on Bayern Munich, that's for sure. But, I mean, as you said, they've done well in the transfer market. I mean, there's a few positions that I'm a wee bit surprised at. As you said there, Arturo Vidal comes in, and he is, by and large, a like-and-like replacement for Bastian Schweinsteiger. I'm sure you'll have a few Man United fans listening to the show right now.
A couple, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe a few. Who, don't get me wrong, will be chuffed a bit having Bastian Schweinsteiger on the side, but they might be wondering why the club couldn't have signed someone a little younger with a bit more energy, and I think that's exactly what Bayern Munich wanted to go. And that's exactly what they did. So aside from that, Arturo Vidal makes perfect sense. I was a bit surprised with the signing of Douglas Costa, if I'm honest with you. I think that kind of came out of nowhere. And I was a bit of wonder as to why the hell are Bayern Munich signing another winger? But as we saw in this first friendly against Inter Milan, I believe it was, and then in the Super Cup as well against Wolfsburg, the boy's got speed, so much speed. And he looks like a real genuine player. We've obviously seen him for Shakhtar in the Champions League, but I think in terms of with the Ukrainian side, he's never been able to show how much of a match winner he is whenever we see him in Europe playing against bigger sides. But he looks like a great signing. But Bayern do still have a few holes in the team. Genuinely surprised that they haven't signed a new striker this summer. They have Robert Lewandowski is the main striker. But aside from him, there isn't that much. We have Thomas Müller, who's obviously a fantastic goal scorer for Germany and for Bayern Munich. But he's not a real standout out-and-out striker like Robert Lewandowski. And if the Polish international does get a pick-up a big injury, there is genuinely no one there to replace him. So, Bayern, yeah, sure, they have the best squad by quite a distance, I think. But, you know, I'm just still a wee bit unsure as to where Pep Guardiola has picked up the right signings this summer. There's also the right-back position as well. Sure, if Philipp Lahm wants to move back there, that's fine. If Pep Guardiola's willing to push him back there after two seasons, the centre midfield, that's another great thing. But aside from that, they've only really got Rafinha, who was shown up a wee bit in the Champions League last season.
Yeah, absolutely. That being said, you mentioned there's holes. I mean, there's holes and then there's holes, right? And there's Bayern Munich's holes, perhaps not be as obvious as other teams. But you mentioned Costa, and we've seen him play so well at Shakhtar the last few years. Not a great Champions League last year, mind you, but when you look at Bayern Munich's wide players, and the two guys that stand out, of course, Arjen Robben, Frank Ribery, both players, you know, suffered once again through injury last season. We know what they can do. We know how great they can be. But Ribery in particular, I think he played 20-odd games last year. Is this more a move for the future, thinking that, you know, eventually one or both those players won't be here?
I mean, I suppose it is on the face of it, but I genuinely don't think Pep Guardiola has much concern over how this Bayern team's going to look in 2 or 3 years. I think he wants players who are ready to play now at this moment and who can win Champions League titles this season. I think that's exactly why we have Costa and Vidal, why Bayern have thrown so much money this summer. But you're absolutely right. Costa has essentially came in because they needed a player who could be Frank Ribery or Arjen Robben from 1 week to the next when the other two are injured. And I think any Bayern fan who watched them last season will be able to tell you that despite all the stars and all the talent they have on their side, whenever Arjen Robben picked up an injury, the team dropped down a gear. There's absolutely no doubt about it, which is a real problem for Bayern Munich. Well, it was last season, because obviously Arjen Robben has a tendency to pick up injuries. Frank Ribery's not so much, he's perhaps not as important to the side as he was maybe last season, or sorry, the season before last. I think Bayern have now eventually moved on from the Frenchman, unfortunately, because they just had to get over the amount of times he has been injured. And I think Douglas Costa has come in because eventually Guardiola has realised he can't take the risk of Robben picking up another injury. So Costa has come in as this sort of marquee substitute signing. He will start a lot of games and he will play a lot of games, but he is in, you know, just in case something goes wrong and Bayern can just bring in another top-class player to play those semi-final games when they need them.
You mentioned, Stefan, that Pep doesn't care about where this team's at in 3 or 4 years' time. It's about now. Is that because he knows he won't be there in 3 or 4 years' time? I know that there's speculation all through last season, all through this summer, of course, and I'm sure it continue about him eventually stepping up and joining Manchester City. I know Pellegrini signed another deal there, but is that going to be a distraction again this year? Do you think, you know, where is Pep's future? Or is it almost understood amongst Bayern Munich and its fan base that, yeah, this guy's here for the time being, but it's not for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, I think from day one, there's always an understanding that a man like Pep Guardiola is always going to be leaving at one point. I mean, I think despite the fact that he is just a fantastic manager, plenty of world-class managers have came to Munich and they've picked up their heart's content and then they've moved on, or perhaps the club's got bored of them and they've shut them out the door. But I think from day one, Pep Guardiola has always been very honest and said, you know, I'm a man, he's a bit like a nomad, if you know what I mean, a nomad coach. He likes to pick up projects along Europe and then picks them up, does what he can, and then he moves on. And I think from day one, that's always been the case at Bayern Munich. But I think when to answer your original question, I simply don't think he does care about what happens to Bayern next season or the season after, because many are convinced that he will move on this season. He signed a 3-year deal, and I think that was because that was all he intended to do in Munich. And I don't think anyone at the club has any other suggestions otherwise from day one, or especially last season and moving into this new season. There's been a lot talking about, you know, what kind of legacy he leaves at the club. Yep, Hank is the man who obviously was before him, was a manager who had a lot of symbols with the club. He was a manager who, you know, he knitted into the way the club was built. It's obviously a club that spends a lot of effort with the ex-players, ex-legends, and moulds them into the club. And Pep Guardiola isn't part of that. And that's very notable from 1 week to the next. If Bayern Munich aren't playing well, the club, in one way or another, will let the media know that. I think that's something that Pep Guardiola, over his time in Munich, has picked up. And he doesn't appreciate it. So, sure, he's going to throw everything at it this season, but I'm not entirely sure if he'll be here next season, regardless of what he does win in May.
Let's look way, way too far in the future here, shall we, for a second, and really speculate. So let's assume that Pep is leaving for wherever it's going to be, Man City, wherever. Is there an obvious choice to replace him at Bayern Munich? I know Jurgen Klopp's sitting there without a job right now. In the past, he suggested that that wouldn't be the right job for him, but money talks, you know, for anyone. Is there an obvious guy sitting there waiting?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, as you said, Jurgen Klopp's been mentioned, but I think Jurgen Klopp's been mentioned near enough every single job since he left Dortmund. I think he was approached by Marseille last week as far as the news.
Why not?
Well, exactly. But obviously Jurgen Klopp would make perfect sense. But today, actually, I was just talking about tonight, actually, the German press have actually started to talk about Dieter Hecking, and the Wolfsburg manager,
right,
as a possible replacement. But there quite simply is no standout because no one's really began to seriously think about it. But it is quite interesting as to what actually happens, because what we tend to find at Bayern Munich is they have a habit of bringing in these huge, important international managers. We've seen Trapattoni, Van Gaal, and obviously Pep Guardiola. They bring in these big names when they need the business done. They need to show the fans, you know, if they lose a league title or two, they need to bring in these managers to show, look, we mean business. These guys are the best in the business. This is how it's going to work. But then usually what happens is when these managers leave, the club kind of get a bit more humble. They kind of move back towards their roots. And they look within the Bundesliga itself. That's why we've seen Jupp Heynckes also come in after Van Gaal. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what the club do again afterwards. There's a lot of good managers in the Bundesliga, as Dortmund have shown with Thomas Tuchel, as Dieter Hecking perhaps of Wolfsburg. I'm not too sure how many Bayern fans would appreciate the noise of Dieter Hecking maybe showing up at Allianz Arena right now. But there are other examples, such as Lucien Favre as well at Gladbach. So at the moment, it's impossible to predict who could replace a man like Pep Guardiola. But I think it might be someone a little closer to home rather than another international superstar.
Well, if it's Dieter Hecking, that's obviously an inspired choice. Wolfsburg, once again, have been a good story last year. They enter this year as being, I guess it's fair to say, Stefan, if not Bayern, they could be the ones to watch this season if they can retain Kevin De Bruyne. And that's a big question. Big rumours about him being off to Man City for big-time money. He was great last year. I forget how many assists he had, but it was over 20 assists, wasn't it? It was incredible. Any chance he stays at Wolfsburg? And if he does stay, are Wolfsburg a legitimate contender for the title?
Yeah, I think he had the record, actually, in the Bundesliga for assists. The number doesn't come to mind, actually, at the moment. But, obviously, when it comes to Wolfsburg, I think what happens is at this moment in the season, everyone's looking at who can challenge Bayern Munich. And I think the most notable name, aside from maybe Borussia Dortmund, is Wolfsburg. And then once you move down from that, the next question is, right, well, is it possible without De Bruyne? I think if they lose De Bruyne, there's going to be a real issue on their hands because they simply don't have anyone who can replace him. There's no one in Germany who can replace him, let alone at Wolfsburg. But I'm a little more optimistic on whether he's going to stick around or not. I think Man City have made a formidable effort to sign him, but Wolfsburg aren't a club who simply have to buy or have to sell to continue buying. They spent an extreme amount of money over the last few seasons, something around 20 or 30 million euros. A transfer window without any real money coming back into the club. So it's not like your Dortmunds or your Schalke's where, you know, they have to keep selling to then buy more and more players. Wolfsburg can quite happily sit back and reject big bids and not have to worry about the transfer budget for the next season. But what we've seen in the press this week is De Bruyne simply saying, you know what, I'm not going to push a move. That's been the big news where, you know, the club are saying, you know, we don't want to sell him, but in this day and age, it really comes down to what the player wants to do. So he came in the German press a few days ago and said, I'm not going to push through this move. So unless something seriously comes from Manchester City, I at this point would be quite surprised if he did move to England.
Yeah, let's hope he stays where he is. He's a great fit there. And as I mentioned, one of the great stories in European football last year, and in many ways put Wolfsburg on the map, you know, around Europe. People talking about that team. And with Hecking in charge there, they're going the right direction. Dortmund's intriguing, aren't they? Klopp's gone, of course. You mentioned incomers Thomas Tuchel, who is so well respected throughout Germany. Is it, you mentioned that, you know, they're in almost that second tier of teams after Bayern Munich as a team that could perhaps cause some trouble. Is that asking too much of a new manager? Is this going to be more of a transitional year, or are they at the point now where they can continue where they left off?
Well, I think when Thomas Tuchel came in, he and the club very quickly announced that, you know, this season's all about getting back into the top four. The top four is where the club has to be to continue running at the level they want to be at. So, you know, from this point on, it's a very humble beginning for Thomas Tuchel. But I think the club and Tuchel himself are perhaps a little coy on the matter. I think with regards to Tuchel's fantastic appointment, I mean, in many ways, it's a very obvious appointment. There's so many parallels between him and Jurgen Klopp. But, you know, it's interesting because he comes in as this fantastic tactician. And boy, he's changed the team around so quickly from what he's from, you know, taking over about 2 months ago. The team looked different. I mean, he hasn't actually made that big of a change in terms of transfers. He brought in Castro, Julian Weigl, and Roman Burkey, the goalkeeper. Three players who, you know, aren't exactly first-team players. I mean, sure, Castro will play. Weigl's a very young player who they signed from 1860 Munich, and Burkey probably will replace Weidenfeller in goals. But we're not talking huge signings. We're not talking, you know, your Vidals, your Douglas Costas. But the team looked different. Jurgen Klopp, you know, despite all he's done, the Dortmund tactically was very simple. He obviously made a name of the club with his gegenpressing style of football, very quick, very aggressive football. But last season, it was very simple, punt and press, you know. Dortmund would lump the ball up the park and it would cause problems for, well, themselves, to be honest with you. And since Tuchel's come in, we've seen a lot of the players in the squad, you know, revert back to the previous form. Gundogan, Shinji Ogawa and Henrik Mkhitaryan all look like brand new players because for the first time in about 12 or 18 months, Dortmund have the ball on the ground and they're passing it about for a change. So it's very exciting at Dortmund at the moment. The fans, Tuchel, the board, they'll say, you know what, we're playing this safe this season, we want to get top four. But they certainly have the quality to challenge Wolfsburg, and certainly if they want, if they can maybe, with a bit of luck, even Bayern Munich.
Really? Yeah, well, be interesting. It's going to be odd seeing Dortmund playing without that man on the sidelines, you know, the psychopathic stare. He's been wonderful as Klopp, but Tuchel, as you mentioned, one to watch, very much a rising force, perhaps,
well,
in European football.
Thomas Tuchel's quite animated himself.
Is he, yeah?
If I can make a minor point, actually, Pep Guardiola is one of the few things that's been noted, actually, the last few months, is he's so much more angry on the sideline for one reason or another, so he might make up for it.
Let's hope so. We love that. The sidelines. Listen, Stefan, thank you so much. Really enjoyed this. Enjoyed week one, and we hope to speak to you real soon about the Bundesliga.
Always a pleasure, James. Thank you. See you soon.
That's Stefan Binkowski. Please follow Stefan on Twitter at SBinkowski. That's BIENKOWSKI. Stefan knows more about German football than all of you put together. I guarantee you that much. He's been writing about it for numerous publications for years. He really is one of the authorities on it. And as I keep mentioning, it's an exciting weekend for Sportsnet, as we're showing a lot of Bundesliga starting this weekend, Friday actually, 2:30 Eastern on Sportsnet World. Bayern Munich against Hamburg on Saturday at 12:30. It's Dortmund, Borussia Mönchengladbach. That should be a really good matchup on Sportsnet 1. And on Sunday at 11:30, we have Stuttgart against FC Köln on Sportsnet World. So lots of German football coming your way. And we've seen in recent years with Dortmund being a force across Europe, Bayern Munich, of course, being a dominant force across Europe, Germany is very much a relevant force in world football, in the club scene, and obviously in the international scene. Well, let's move on now, shall we, from the German Bundesliga to the Barclays English Premier League, and from one Scotsman to another Scotsman, Bobby the Brains McMahon joins me. Bobby, how's it going, pal?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, thanks. A real good Scottish theme today from Stefan Binkowski on German football, a proud Scotsman, to Bobby McMahon on English football, another proud Scotsman. I love it. I love it.
Right, it's symmetry, isn't it?
It certainly is. So listen, the season's begun.
Yeah.
It's already begun, and within, well, not even 90 minutes of their first match, we got some controversy, Bobby, with Jose Mourinho in Chelsea, and this time his medical staff. It's never his fault, right? We've discussed that before. It's never, ever Jose's fault. But is there more to this that we don't know, or is this pushing it to new levels of arrogance and hypocrisy?
I would go for the latter. he's always been a pretty polarizing personality right from the beginning. He came to prominence with Porto, and then through the, you know, first time round with Chelsea, and then Inter, Real Madrid, back to Chelsea. It kind of reminds you of, what was it, Ferguson's comment about, was it a comment about Joey Barton about starting an argument in a phone box or something?
Right.
And that's just about it. There's always something. But as somebody pointed out on Twitter, through all this controversy and through all this the to and fro about the what the doctor did, what the doctor didn't do, what the physio did, what the physio didn't do, and what Jose wanted or assumed they would have done, is the bottom line is that nobody's talking about the fact that they dropped 2 points.
Yeah, Yeah, it's almost vintage Fergie, isn't it?
It is. It's just a little drop of the shoulder, and we all go the other way. And the next thing you know, we're talking about the medical doctor.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the fact that, quite frankly, Swansea were the better team.
But honestly, if he's that concerned about the optics of a result after week one, I mean, that's an issue, isn't it? Because, come on, everyone knows that it's commonplace for a good team, even a defending champion, to not look good the first game back of a new season. So if that's what he's doing, that I think that speaks for himself and perhaps what he's prioritising here. But for those of you who haven't quite figured out what we're talking about, during that match, late in the game, Eden Hazard goes down on the field. The doctor and the medical staff run on. This is Ava Canero, the only female doctor in the Premier League, as far as I know, runs on to treat him. Because of that, he had to go off the field, leaving Chelsea a man short and potentially exposed to a counter-attack. Now, if you watch the replay, you see Jose Mourinho going nuts. Get off the field. He's fine. He's just tired. And he was just tired. That's the reality. But it's a dangerous line, isn't it? These are professionals in the healthcare industry who generally are paid to know when a player's hurt or not. Who's to know whether Hazard is really hurt or exhausted? If he stayed on his feet more often, maybe we'd know, right? But he's got form.
But exactly. But to take this to another level, and this is the stuff that's come out during the week as well, is the referee is in control of the field, and
right.
The referee has to wave on the staff, and it was the referee that instructed. So the referee obviously had a concern, and usually you kind of see in these situations. I haven't looked over this enough. But it's pretty standard in these situations to see the referee leaning over the player and asking if the player's, want help, mm-hmm. or whether he's just, he's just going to shake it off and get up. So, how involved in the referee's decision was Hazard, and what was his reaction? It goes on and on and on. But what it really comes down to is I think you were alluding to there, James, is what does it really say about a situation like that in the first game of the season, that Josie's taking a rant like that in a situation that must happen. Can you really imagine a situation where a referee is waving medical staff on and the medical staff have to turn around the bench
to the gaffer.
Go, Josie, is it okay if we go on?
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous, right?
It's a real problem there. And that's why I do wonder if there's more to it, if there was some hostility between Ava Canero and Jose beforehand. Had he had words with her before? I don't know. Who knows?
There can only be one God at Stamford Bridge.
And it's not John Terry.
No.
It's not John Terry. It's Jose Mourinho. And the fact that she's a female as well, it's getting played up even more now as well. So it's we're talking about it leading this segment on the show as opposed to the games itself, which speaks for itself. So if that was Jose's motivation, well done, Jose. You suckered us all again. Let's look at Chelsea on the field, though. They weren't obviously very good in the first game. It's been a pretty quiet summer so far. Now, the window doesn't close for another couple of weeks. They could still surprise us all. There's rumours about them going in for John Stones, a defender from Everton, although now the talk is that Man United might be up for him as well. Do you think there's still some pounds to be spent here by Jose Mourinho? Because compared to previous years, he's done nothing pretty much.
What we don't know is what's happening behind the scenes in terms of the depth that Chelsea have in terms of that youth squad.
Mm-hmm.
There's really been their business model has been about signing young players and loaning out a considerable number of them and then finding ways of monetizing them and basically balancing the books, perhaps even doing better than balancing the books, by then selling these players on. But there's still a number of the players that you would think would have a chance of starting in most other teams. But from a senior player point of view, it's still a pretty thin squad. And he was fairly lucky last year in terms of, without talking about Diego Costa's hamstrings, which I think has got to come into every conversation you have about the general depth of the Chelsea squad and whether they have enough cover in each position. But it wouldn't surprise me if Chelsea did dip into the transfer market again before the season starts, because there are a couple of these positions where you think, and then you can go back to, let's go back to the Diego Costa thing, right? You got Diego Costa. If he plays, fantastic player. He's going to score a lot of goals. He, you know, he's got that WWF personality. You know, you either love him or you hate him, but the Chelsea fans love him. Then you get down to Remy. Not sure if he's really that strong a backup. And then you've got the Falcao experiment, which I don't think anybody except Jose Mourinho thinks is ever going to work.
It's the strangest signing, isn't it, of the off-season. Out of all the players you think he may have gone for, you know, why Falcao? Yeah, he had a relationship with Costa, yeah, Atletico Madrid, but I don't know. I call it one of Jose's reclamation projects, right? He could look like a genius.
Well, I think it's about trying to show he's the smartest guy in the room.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's move on to maybe the heirs apparent to Chelsea as champions, and that is.
Before we move on, can I say one thing, James?
Sure, absolutely.
John Joe Shelby.
Love him.
Wasn't he great?
Love him. I always did. Even at Liverpool, I loved him.
You know, like there was a number of great performances from Swansea players, but I talked to a couple of friends about this, and they agreed as well. There's times when John Joe Shelby looks like he could be a fantastic player.
Yeah.
If he can get that consistency to his game and get that right balance in the middle of the park, we could be talking about a very, very good player and a tremendous investment from Swansea's point of view.
He's got all the tools, hasn't he, to be a very good player. He's perhaps got to just temper that, you know, he's a little bit too tempestuous, shall we say, I think.
Yeah, it's better. Might come, you know, maybe that's just an experience thing and, you know, just the whole thing about maybe playing on a more regular basis as well than the chance he got at Liverpool. You look at that midfield at Swansea, you've got him, with him and Jack Cork, that looks like that could be the kind of new central midfield twosome for them. So I just thought against Chelsea, some of the passing and the way he threaded that Chelsea defence at times on Saturday, I thought was just superb.
I think I've asked you this question before, but if Gary Monk was called Guerrero Marquinho, would he be considered one of the top young managers in football right now?
Well, he's done pretty well. And that performance, I thought they were really, really good. Montero was one of the players I tipped last year to be a player to watch.
Well, he is fine, isn't he?
Unfortunately, he got a lot of injuries last year. But I think, you know, if he stays fit, he could be a cracker. And you've got on the other side, you've got Ayew, who could be the signing of the season.
Yeah, not Jordan, right? The other one.
No, the other one. The good one.
The good one, that's right. The good brother.
Yeah.
I think Villa got the bad one, right?
Yeah, now, you know, Gomez in the middle of the park has his moments. He's not the sharpest in front of the net, but he is a handful. And they have signed a little bit of depth there as well. So, you know, Swansea continue, since they've come up, to be one of the real... They've really added something to the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree. And we haven't even mentioned Gylfi Sigurdsson, right? Who is going to be, been the last 3 years, one of the top midfielders in the Premier League. He's been just brilliant.
Yeah.
So I really hope to see Swansea improve on last year's performance. They finished, eighth last year, which is fantastic for them, really.
Yeah.
But are they going to be pushing Southampton for that seventh spot? I think they could well be. This year,
I think if it wasn't for Southampton doing so well, some more people I think would have been talking about the Swansea performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. They were very, very good. Got to talk about the Red Devils. I'm afraid it's a soccer podcast in Canada, in the world. So therefore, if we don't, I get hammered for it. So let's take a real positive spin. David De Gea, he's on the bench last week. He's not making the trip for the match this week. It seems to be fait accompli that he's off to Real Madrid. I can't understand why any fans would be surprised by this. You know, the lure of Madrid for a Spaniard is huge. But if you're Louis van Gaal and you look at your bench, okay, you got Victor Valdez who played last week. On the bench last week. You got my brain's cramping. Oh, Romero who started last week. He's not a quality goalkeeper.
Well, he looked like he was this spherical kind of object that was put at his feet now and again. Seemed to terrify the life out of him.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh my God, what's this?
Well, it's a strange thing. Keep it away from me. Much like Valdez, right? I mean, at Barcelona, Valdez never saw the ball anyway. So it was perfect for him. But surely before the window closes, if they're going to spend money, and they've spent a lot so far, they have to address the goalkeeper situation if De Gea's on his way to the Bernabeu, right?
Well, let's look at the top. Like we started off with Jose Mourinho here, right? Let's look at the guy at the top at Manchester United. You know, Van Gaal's track record is there is only it's very similar to Mourinho. There is only one God. There is only one man that gets the applause, and there's one man that's always. You look through his record, particularly his time at Barcelona. Van Gaal's relationship with the media was absolutely awful. It's not got that stage with Manchester United yet, but if he stays any longer than this year, I guarantee it will happen, because it always happens with him. And the other thing that happens with the players, like he's kind of like the Dutch Graeme Souness, except he doesn't batter players.
Right, exactly. But you think he might, though, right? I mean, he's always on the edge there.
Yeah, there's always that threat. But, you know, like it's almost like the Souness model of getting a point and the first thing you do is go in and pick a fight.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, you mentioned the media issues with him, and you see the conference post-match last week, he was singing to the media. You know, When I'm 64 is ripping off the Beatles. It was like, it's weird, isn't it? When he gets too cozy with the media. We saw it last year as well, a little bit. He's trying to get almost be too friendly. Because you know that beneath the surface lies this monster that despises everything about scribes and media hacks.
Yeah. The history through Barcelona and playing Rivaldo wide on the left.
Yeah.
You know, you go back through all the history and the battles he had with both the media and the players. So I don't think you put anything. You know, we can talk about not going with Romero as the first choice. I wouldn't put it past him, to be honest.
Really? So let me ask you this. What is the biggest issue then? Would it be Romero or Valdez being the number one goalkeeper this year, or would it be Wayne Rooney expected to be the top man up front scoring 25-plus goals?
I think I'd go for the little bit of lack of depth up front.
Yeah.
I just don't see how they can go and hope that Wayne Rooney. I think Rooney will score goals because Rooney always, you know, given the position as a good solid try record. He's very close to breaking Dennis Law's record. So you can't question that. But you are talking about an extended season where we've got the Premier League, we've got the Champions League as well. You know, you've got the participation in the cups. So there's got to be a lot of mileage on these legs. Going throughout this season, so you take Rooney out of that, and you know, does he have some in his back pocket? Does he have some magic? Is there somebody going to pop out of no place and play that position as well? I still don't, and on one level I do understand it. On another level, I absolutely don't understand it. Is allowing Van Persie to go?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because even though he wasn't, you know, where perhaps he had been in the past last year, injuries once again creeping up. He still, when he played, he scored goals. And he's that clinical finisher they haven't got right now. Even Wayne Rooney, you're right. I like Wayne Rooney. Very good player, will score goals, but he's not a natural finisher like an RVP.
Well, you know, Van Persie, I think, you know, Rooney's got this. I think there's always been part of the Wayne Rooney approach to the game. He's absolutely desperate to be involved. And when he gets isolated, he tends to lose a little bit of that discipline and he starts going deep. He starts chasing the ball. Well, the likes of a man, Van Persie, I think, through experience, is much more willing to be quiet for long stretches of the game and then wait for that opportunity to come at him rather than chasing that opportunity.
Right.
And I think that's the difference. And I think, you know, yes, Van Persie's striking rate went down. Yes, he was injured last year. You know, shades of the Arsenal time, but perhaps not quite as bad. But for the amount of money they got for him, even though they're talking about getting the wages off the books, it just seemed like a little bit of a false economy to let him go. I was quite surprised at that.
Are you looking forward to some Friday night football? Because this Friday on Sportsnet 2:30 Eastern, Villa take on Manchester United on Sportsnet 360. I actually quite like it.
And I guess next year, now, maybe you know this, James, because I'm not quite sure of it, because I thought the actual standard Friday night football was getting started next year.
See, that's what I thought as well.
I think this is a special circumstance. I think there's a combination of things. I read about somewhere along in the last week or so, I read something about the fact that United have got their Champions League qualifier, the playoff game next
week.
Right,
okay.
There's that, but there's some demonstration in Northwest England during the weekend.
Right.
And that was, they wanted to clear, I guess the police force are out in, I think the National Front or some of these kind of whammy-bammy parties. Think they made a decision to move this up to Friday night. So it's almost like a precursor to what we're going to get next year, which of course means that we're reaching ever closer to the fact that we're really encouraging soccer fans not to work.
Yeah, well, most of them don't, do they?
Well, even in North America, though, right? Particularly in North America, because really you can...
I know.
My father, who has retired and been retired for many years, thinks he's died and gone to heaven.
I bet he has, yeah. I know.
He just cannot believe...
4 days of football.
Yeah. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Oh, my dad retired about 5 years ago now, and he alone, I think, is keeping Sportsnet World afloat. Because with the football and the rugby he watches, he is the guy watching, you know, First Division Heineken Cup rugby on Saturday at midnight. He's the guy watching it. He loves it. He's like, oh, this is the best thing ever.
And if he should happen to get a rating book.
A what?
A rating book.
There's a reading book.
You could hit the jackpot, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, Bobby, a couple of things before we go I want to get to you with. Quickly, Mario Balotelli, he's on the way out of Liverpool. It was broken today, some of his antics the past year, which really disconnected him with the team and with Brendan Rodgers. One was during a training exercise halfway through the game. He just turned around and lobbed a halfway line attempt, scored the goal against his keeper. It wasn't even against the keeper. He was supposed to be for a laugh. He thought it was really funny. No one else did. He was interrupting the assistant coach to talk to his buddy on the sidelines. A bunch of Mario stuff. Now, this time last year, we discussed this signing. I said it was one of those calculated risks, £60 million worth. May or may not work, but let's give it a whirl. Well, they gave it a whirl. Hasn't worked out. What was it worth it in the end, do you think?
No, because I think Brendan Rodgers and some people around Liverpool talked about it was a no-brainer. And maybe it was Jamie Carragher, I can't remember.
There's a no-brainer involved.
He's definitely got the no-brainer bit right. But the bottom line is, a situation like when you spend that amount of money with a player of that kind of reputation, there is a risk. And I think, over the early years with Balotelli, we kind of laughed at him, what a character, that's what the game needs, all the rest. But when you keep on doing these things over an extended period of time, it takes your focus away, it takes your energy away, and then it begins to become a team distraction and all the rest. And it all adds up to going, it doesn't matter how much talent you've got. At the end of the day, you're just a liability.
Yeah.
Like if he was scoring 30 goals a year, it'd be different. But he's not. And so as soon as you stop being that player with great potential that actually delivers on the field, you just become another liability.
100% agree. One more thing to our listeners out there. If you get a chance, if you don't already, make sure you follow Bobby on Twitter, at Bobby Soccer Rep, R-E-P. And read his columns each week on Forbes. They're outstanding. They really are. Now, you wrote one this past week about Sevilla in Spain, and essentially saying they might be the model club for all those big clubs across Europe that aren't considered super clubs per se, but run their business the right way.
It's just, you look at the record since 2000, since Monchi came in, and I guess you could put Porto in that same kind of class, although Porto, perhaps with the third-party ownership, have had a slightly different or a less transparent business model. But you look at the players Sevilla signed, and the most fascinating thing I found in doing the research on the Sevilla piece, when I actually looked at the players that they'd signed and they'd moved on, it wasn't just the fact that they made, I think it was something like 250, I just collected about 17, I think it was about 17 players, $270 million of a gain between what they bought and what they sold these players for, which is incredible in itself over that kind of that period of time. But the thing that struck me about it, James, was most important, how few of these players have gone to another club and been a flop.
Yeah, yeah.
These players
have gone system
on
works.
And good players.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Top players, actually. I mean, Sergio Ramos, wasn't he? Wasn't he originally a Sevilla player?
He was indeed.
He was, right,
He was a youth squad player in the Celtic, sold him for, I think, it was $20 million when he was a 19-year-old to Real Madrid. Jose Antonio Reyes might be the one that's closest to never fulfilled his potential. But you look at the rest of them, and the other thing that struck me when I looked at it is how many managers have had their resumes bolstered and bolstered by the fact they're at Sevilla, and clubs looking at it going, look how successful Sevilla is, we should go and get the manager And the reality is they shouldn't have gone to get the manager. They should have gone to get the director of football, because he's the real, he's the man that kind of makes it work. The other piece, just to wrap it all up, was Stephen Nzonzi at Stoke.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I always felt like Arsenal needed a player like Stephen Nzonzi.
Yeah.
But every time I mentioned it to an Arsenal supporter, they went, he plays for Stoke. He's just a big bruiser, right? I never thought, he's certainly got a physical aspect to him, but I always kind of thought Nzonzi was actually quite strong technically. I'm really fascinated to see how he makes out in Sevilla.
You know, it's funny, late last year I was on the Premier League panel on a Saturday, and we had a segment where basically they picked two players who wore a certain brand of footwear. They were sponsoring the segment. And one of them was Nzonzi against, I forget who it was now, it was Stoke against United or something. And they gave me Nzonzi. So, James, can you take care of Nzonzi? I went, oh, crap, really? okay. So I had to, like, you know, do a bit of homework on Nzonzi the night before.
Yep.
And just what you said there, I was looking at his Opta stats. So I was going on Squawker, WhoScored.com, right? All those great analytical sites, and thinking, wow, this is a player. This is a proper footballer who's far more than the bruiser, you know, I thought he was as well. And a technically strong player who does it all, is a full box to box midfielder type player. So I agree with you. It'd be interesting in a very technical league how this player will I think he'll thrive.
I think so as well. I think. That game on Tuesday as well, the 5-4 game, like that just kind of sums Sevilla up as well. 4-1 down, come back to 4-all now. They eventually lost it. But they're really not intimidated by Barcelona. So many teams, I think, have come across Barcelona in Champions League play are almost beaten before the start. But Sevilla just have this, they seem to have a character that runs through the team. And then that, perhaps that's part of what they look for in signing these players as well, players that are strong characters and strong-willed.
Well,
but it's amazing how they're put together.
We may criticise the Europa League, but they won it back-to-back, and that speaks for itself. They're a team of winners. They know how to win, you know, in pretty hostile grounds. Bobby, as always, mate, really enjoyed that. Let's get you back on as soon as possible and enjoy the games as we can.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, James.
That is Bobby the Brains McMahon. As mentioned, please follow Bobby on Twitter. One of the best football follows, you'll find on Twitter at Bobby Soccer Rep. Read his Forbes article, and he's from the business side of things to a guy that played the game at a decent level, he is the man to follow. Now, Premier League action this weekend on Sportsnet begins, as I mentioned, this Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, Friday afternoon football on Sportsnet. Fantastic. Actually, on Sportsnet 360. Villa, Manchester United. Saturday at 9:30, Spurs, Stoke on Sportsnet. It's West Ham, Leicester on Sportsnet 1 and Watford, West Brom on Sportsnet World. And then all the way to Monday, 2 o'clock, it is Liverpool against New Boys Bournemouth. That can be found on Sportsnet World. I hope you enjoyed that. My thanks to Bobby the Brains McMahon. My thanks to Stefan Bienkowski. My thanks to the guy behind the glass, Brian Calhoun. It's been fun, guys. We're back on Monday. Well, actually, I'm not back on Monday, but certainly Thomas Dobby and that other guy, the guy with the great hair, Brendan Dunlop. They're the guys. They are back with you on Monday. I'll be back here next Thursday with John Molinaro. Hope you enjoyed that, guys. As always, apologies and cheers for watching.